Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. It's a Christmas Eve double episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Fansided's NBA Vertical. Today, Trevor Magnotti is at home. He's traveled back to his stomach grounds, I believe the same hometown as Taco Trey Kirby, but he's kind enough to join us to talk about J.R. Smith. Trevor, how's it going? And happy holidays, my man.
Doing good. Happy holidays to you as well. I'm back in God's time zone, Central Time, which is wonderful. And that's my little kind of, I guess, claim to basketball Twitter fame is I watched Trey Kirby play high school basketball when I was like 6 or 7 years old.
So was he good? Like, was he good at high school basketball?
He was like a, I'm pretty sure he was like kind of like a sometimes starter, sometimes bench guy. I'll just say that it's very fitting that his favorite player is Brad Miller because they have very similar styles.
That's great. But also, Central Time or West Coast Time, which is better?
Central, much better.
I kind of always wonder what I like to be to live out west because I kind of would enjoy things starting at like 4 o'clock. Like I'm here for that, especially if I could get a job where I could work at home. But there's complications to that too, I'm sure.
Yeah, when I get off work at 7, it's not so great.
Yeah, you're missing like everything in the East and all the NBA games in the East. But now we're here today, to, obviously, as I mentioned, to talk about J.R. Smith. If you listen to the episode that's already up, my Warriors game preview with Danny LaRue, we didn't get to talk about J.R. very much, and because Cavs Warriors is a lot more important than just talking about J.R., but we did know at that time when I recorded that J.R. Smith was going to be out 12 to 14 weeks instead of the originally reported 4 to 6. This 12 to 14 week parameter really came into focus when he had surgery on Friday, the day before Christmas Eve on the 23rd. And the Cavs' press release announcing a successful surgery, that there's this little nugget in there that obviously drew the most attention, and that's J.R. is out 12 to 14 weeks. For what that means, I recorded a quick little 5-minute news thing if you want to listen to that. But basically what that means is J.R. Smith is not going to be back until about a month before the playoffs. Trevor, for those of you that don't know, Trevor is an athletic trainer in real life. On the internet he is Kurt Rambis, but he in real life is an athletic trainer. So Trevor, just kind of based on what you know without having seen his X-rays or seeing the MRIs and whatnot, what can cause a thumb injury, a thumb break, to be a 4 to 6? And then post-surgery, it's a 12 to 14-week span instead.
Well, I think the big thing that needs to be remembered here is that this was not just a simple break of the bone in JR's thumb. Likely what this was, given how he injured it and kind of how things have gone through the last few days, likely this was what's called an avulsion fracture. And basically what that means is that the ligament that sits on the inside of your hand, kind of right at the base of your thumb, right where the webbing starts, there's a ligament right there. And essentially what that means is that ligament pulled off and ruptured, so to speak, and pulled off a small little bone chip with it. So that would be my best guess at what has happened, and that surgery would be to basically go in, grab that ligament, attach it back down to the base of the bone. Ligament heals. There's no actual real damage to the ligament. It's still intact, but it's not at its attachment. And then, you know, that heals back down to the bone and he's good to go. What can happen alongside that is there's a lot of other different little structures in that area. There's kind of a tendinous attachment for some of the tendons in your hand that goes right through there, and there's also a few other things that help with joint stability. That those can also get injured in an injury like this, and that can make things a little bit longer. Essentially, what I think the recovery lengthening is going to be from is more of kind of a conservative estimate as to how long JR is going to take to get his function fully back in his hand. It is his right hand. It is a shooting hand. So that's obviously a very big factor in here. That's going to make this a little bit more complicated. You know, when I saw the 6 to 8 week recovery timetable, I was a little bit skeptical just because I knew kind of what the injury probably was, and you know, 6 to 8 weeks for a fracture to heal makes sense, but if there was any ligament involvement, that's going to make it take longer. So I think it's going to I think that 12 week period makes things a little bit more sense to me, and I think the primary reasons for that are that ligament needs adequate time to heal down and to be able to scar in, and he needs the adequate time to be able to get his shooting stroke back and be able to dribble comfortably with that dominant hand in order for him to get back at full force.
So when we're looking at him recovering, obviously I think he would be in a cast for this time.
For a little bit, he's going to be in one, but they're going to try to get him moving sooner rather than later, I would think. I think he might spend a little bit of time in a cast, and then a little bit of time in a splint, similar to what we saw with Iman Shumpert last year after his surgery. He was in that splint for a while. I would assume that's how they're going to protect it, just so he does get some motion. He's not completely restricted, because that can cause some muscle weakening in your hand, but just getting put in a cast for that long. And they obviously don't want to have that happen, because this is such a small fracture. This isn't like a fracture through the entire bone. It's really just a little chip that comes off. I'm assuming they're going to want him protected from stressing that ligament area, but not completely immobilized.
So what exactly physically can he do while he is hurt? Obviously, like, he can, you know, it's not like his legs are gone or anything, but if you just think, I mean, just thinking about, I thought about this when I saw him walking around in the cast after Wednesday's game, when he was in the cast and we got to see him, didn't get to talk to him, we got to kind of see him around with the team. Just losing your hand, it limits what you can do. You can't lift. Like, you know, you can't bench press. You can't do anything where you're going to actually improve your strength in your arms, because you don't want to have the imbalance, especially as a shooter, mind you. I imagine it would make it harder to run. I imagine there's just a lot of things JR can't do now. So what does he do during this time? Because when he comes back, they're going to be about a month away from the playoffs. And he wasn't exactly in great shape when he got hurt anyway, because he came in, admittedly, because of the contract situation, not in the best of shape. But that, I think that's partially why he suffered these little knick-knack injuries during the year with his legs and his knee. And then he gets this. It kind of just feels like, incidentally, because of the hand, everything snowballed in a way that isn't really setting up JR to have the type of year the Cavs kind of need out of him.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for him during this recovery process is going to be maintaining that conditioning. He's probably going to be able to start running probably around a month after the surgery, just because you do want running does put a little bit of stress on your arm as it kind of moves through space, when he's in the splint, they're going to want to protect it, so he probably won't do that. He'll probably bike a lot during that time, but probably won't be doing any hard running until about a month after the surgery. And I think that's going to be, the biggest thing for him is, not just working on getting all of his, shooting and his dribbling back, at the end of the rehab process, but, also maintaining that conditioning and building on the conditioning that he was trying to kind of build back on the fly. The nice thing for him is while he's going to be out, he also is going to be able to train in kind of like an off season like way when it comes to his cardio. And I think that's going to be, something that's going to be helpful for him in trying to get that back. But you're right. That's definitely a big concern is, is he going to have his legs back with him when he comes back? Just because he is going to be weighed up for a little bit, and how is that going to affect him and his abilities in the playoffs when things are going to be a little bit more strenuous than they would be having a full regular season to kind of work yourself into shape?
Yeah, I think that's the really important thing there because they need JR in the playoffs. And it is not ideal to have a guy, no matter if it's your 10th guy or your starting two guard, to have to get in shape during the playoffs in some function, right? That's not great. And especially if you're J.R. Smith, your game is based on your legs. It is based on being able to create enough force and have enough bounce in your step to shoot the ball. Because if you're dead-arming shots, you're going to miss a lot of shots. Shooting is a body function. It is a leg function. It is a leg-up function. And if he's in bad shape, he's not going to be able to play 30 minutes a night in April and in May. And in June, I mean, he can get in shape over those playoffs and when his hand gets back and when he can run. But as we saw with him not working out with the team in training camp and, to start the – and not get coming into the season in not great shape, like you said, off-season workout is different than actually being in game shape. And him being with the team is probably going to help that in some ways because he's going to be in a structured program. I'm sure LeBron will obviously be monitoring that, and Lou will be monitoring that. But there's nothing like being in the day-to-day grind of an NBA season to keep you in shape.
Yeah, exactly. I think that at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, finding that balance between getting his cardio shape and getting his shooting back into form. Because if he doesn't have the best, cardio level heading into the playoffs, he can make up for that by having his shooting kind of on par with what we would expect. And, maybe he's not getting up and down the floor as well, but he's getting in spots and he's shooting very comfortably once he's in the spots that he's comfortable in. That could be a way that could definitely help him compensate for that, or vice versa. If his shot's not going, we can always be okay. He's fresh. He doesn't have the miles on him that I come from just playing through an 82 game regular season. Maybe he can provide better intensity on the floor, even if he's not hitting all the shots that we would normally expect him to.
Yeah. So this leads to some interesting decisions for the Cavs, I think. Because they're not exactly deep on the wing at this point. If Mike Dunleavy was playing well, I would feel better about this, to be honest with you. Because I think if Dunleavy's playing well, you can replace some of JR's shooting with Dunleavy. And you actually get a bit longer with Dunleavy, but he's not really playing that well. He hasn't played well all year. He isn't the guy that I think the Cavs hoped they would get in trading for him. And right now, what they're rolling with, there's a rolling with DeAndre Liggins at starting two guard, which, he, in terms of actual basketball stuff, it isn't great. I know he's been fine. I know he's been playing very active defense, but when he's on offense, you can just see teams ignoring him already, and it's the middle of December. I mean, teams are just going to ignore this dude. Unless he is wide open, he does nothing with the ball but pass it. He just runs around on offense, basically doesn't get in the way. That is not at all replacing J.R. Smith. Amon Shumpert has been really good this year. Teams are still not really paying attention to Amon Shumpert as a shooter because they feel like he's probably going to regress at some point. And to be honest, I think that's probably the smart play, right, is just make Shumpert prove it to you over the course of a whole year or over half of a year or something like that, right? And then, you know, the other options, you could certainly play Jordan McRae. That probably isn't going to go that well for you. You could give Richard Jefferson more minutes. And you have to decide what you're going to do. I mean, just Trevor, before we kind of look at this, especially because I think Shumpert's going to have to do a lot more here, what do you kind of make of the Cavs' wing situation now that JR is going to be out for so long?
Well, I mean, it's kind of the house of cards that we all were kind of skeptical about heading into the season, and honestly heading into last season too. When we look back to last summer when they signed Mo Williams and Richard Jefferson, and those were their two really big signings, you know, I was very skeptical that, you know, that was going to be enough for them on the wing. And it ended up being enough because they got consistent play from J.R. Smith. They got a mostly healthy Iman Shumpert for the year, and they found this, you know, this somewhat useful kind of deep reserve wing in Jordan McRae out of the D League. This year, they again came in, didn't really make any huge changes to their depth. Lost Matthew Dellavedova, which leads to some issues with shooting guard minutes, and brought in Mike Dunleavy. And you know, right now the Cavs honestly probably really miss Matthew Dellavedova, having him able to kind of plug and play with shooting guard minutes, even if he's not the most competent backup point guard. He can sit and spot up next to Kyrie, next to LeBron, and you know he can give you some of that. Dunleavy has looked at times tentative to shoot almost, and when that's his primary role on this team, that's not a good thing. Jefferson's, you know, I'm expecting Jefferson's legs to go any day now.
I've been saying that since the day he signed with the Cavs. Like, I'm just waiting for him to just have no more legs.
Yeah, like that's an issue. And while Shump has been really good, you know, we've seen Iman Shumpert play before this season. Like, we know this is kind of uncharacteristic for him, and maybe things have been fixed with his jumper. Maybe he's understanding a little bit more of the decision making that comes with being a role player in the offense. But you know, there's also the possibility that he could kind of regress to the mean a little bit. So you know, I think it's very tenuous without JR around. I think they're going to need some kind of upgrade, whether that comes from within with guys stepping up, and that mainly speaking to guys down the bench, Dunleavy, Jefferson, Wiggins, McRae, stepping up, or whether it's coming through a trade and finding something to, or some kind of guy to step in and really you know, make a difference in that aspect, kind of like Channing Frye did last year.
Now, well, who would you start at the two guard during the stretch? Because I think what they're going to do is start Liggins. I almost think I would start him on Shumpert because you're going to stagger minutes anyway. I know he's going to close games, which is really what matters, but I almost think I would start him, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I would side more towards starting Liggins. It's what they've been doing, and we've seen it work. I think that Liggins, Liggins works because you've got all three. You got all three of the big three in there at the same time with him when he's playing. He provides a defensive presence, and you know, he's, like you said, he's not going to get in the way of the offense, and he's not going to do anything he's not supposed to do. I like having him come in for that first, like, or in for that first like 5 or 6 minutes, and then Shump coming off the bench to play that second part of the first quarter, because then you can more easily move into your more, you know, killer bench lineups where you're getting, you know, LeBron at the four with multiple wings out there, or you know, your bench heavy units with Kyrie Irving. Shumpert's going to be a big part of those, so I think you want him on the four, kind of in there, already working through, getting warmed up, getting, you know, familiar with the flow of the game, more so than him starting checking out for 3 or 4 minutes and then coming back in and replacing somebody else. I think it's going to give them more flow to start with, or better flow in the rotation to start Wiggins, have Shump come in like 4 to 6 minutes after the start of the game, and then you can kind of work through your rotation as you had been before. Maybe bringing Wiggins back, maybe, you know, holding on to him until later in the second quarter. Things like that. I think I like that a little bit better. And it's been working that way, seemingly so far. So, you know, I'm totally fine with Wiggins continuing to start, just because of what he provides and how that consistency in the rotation is shaken out.
What do you make of Wiggins as a player? We're going to get into some of the other stuff with him here in a second that I think is definitely worth talking about, but I'm just not sure he's actually that good. I mean, his numbers this year are what they are. I mean, he's averaging 3 points a game in about 15 minutes a game. He's shooting 41.3% from the field. He's not even taking a three a game. What he is on the floor doing is playing defense. He's not really a good offensive player unless you leave him wide open for threes. Teams are going to ignore him. They're going to ignore everybody, like I said, but he is what he is. He's going to fill a gap, and I think the best thing you can say about him in terms of him being a player on this team is that he's more competent in that role than Jordan McRae, or if they wanted to make Cade Felder the backup point guard and give Amon Shumpert more minutes. Like, he's just more competent than the two guys who could take him out of his spot.
Yeah, I definitely think that's kind of the impression that I get. I mean, Wiggins throughout his career has been a player of inconsistency. Like, he played with three teams before Cleveland from 2012 to 2014, had varying levels of success. You know, I mean, he was on that Orlando team, never really broke into the rotation, couldn't really find his shot, and then he goes to Oklahoma City, becomes a little bit better of a three-point shooter, but, you know, other aspects of his game lagged, and he wasn't able to find consistent minutes there. He has, you know, the game that broke advanced stats in the 2014 season with the Heat, where he had that, you know, PER of 129, but it was only in like 2 minutes.
That's like Uber elite for like 2 minutes.
Yeah. And then gets cut. And then, you know, he's worked his way through Europe, the D League, and now he's back in the NBA. And, you know, I think he's kind of figured out a little bit of what he's good at. And I think that's the big thing that puts him above the other two guys is, you know, we don't really know what Cade Felder is good at the NBA level.
Right now, it's nothing.
I mean,
I know it's being like really blunt, but like I keep thinking of the first time they tried to give him, you know, 8 minutes or something like that, and he just looked completely out of his depth. And he was playing against Chris Paul, so like, of course he's gonna look terrible. But like, every time he's been in the game, even in the garbage time against the Nets, it's just like, I need him to do something, and I don't feel like he actually does anything that's gonna make me be like, I need to see more of him. And that's kind of the problem I have.
Yeah, and I think the same can be said for Jordan McRae. I mean, McRae is good at stuff, but we don't know what he needs to do.
I think it's he's good at the wrong stuff.
Yeah, he was good at the stuff that made him important last year, playing next to Dellavedova. This year, playing more in kind of like a rotation role, you know, they don't really need him to be this on-ball scorer that he was on bench lineups last year. But back to Wiggins, I think the biggest thing that I like about him is that, you know, he's not the best finisher, and he's not the most consistent shooter, but he does things that create efficient looks. Like, he's only going to take high efficiency shots. He takes those threes when he's wide open. He drives the baseline, gets transition looks. He's gotten to the free throw line a lot this year. I mean, for a player who's playing, you know, 14 and a half minutes, for him to shoot 18 free throw attempts, you know, that's pretty good for that level of or for the minutes that he's playing. So I think that, you know, he's done a good job getting the drawing contact. He's done a good job taking smart shots. And, you know, defensively, he's a pretty good player. So while I know that he's not like, he's definitely not a guy who needs to be consistently in a in an NBA rotation, he's exactly what you want to find out of the D League. He's one of those guys who is going to make smart plays, who has the talent to step in when you have an injury like this and play well.
Yeah, I think that's what you asked him. And I think there's something else with him too that's worth getting into. He has a pass that I think would be very fair to say, if you're a Cavs fan out there and you don't want to root for him, I think that's more than reasonable. If you don't know, DeAndre Liggins, a couple of years ago, was charged with domestic violence. If you can go look at the full report, you can look at everything that happened with him, and he did play two NBA seasons. A quote he had in this Jason Lloyd story that just came out, he said, that kind of blackball, I mean, him getting charged with domestic violence during that time, and, you know, he stuck in the D-League and he made it back and stuff, was a D-League Defensive Player of the Year. Two times D-League Defensive Player of the Year, won a D-League Championship. If you want to feel uncomfortable rooting for this guy, I think that's well within your means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm definitely in the camp. I mean, if you're familiar with me, I'm probably one of the biggest Lance Stevenson haters among basketball Twitter, just because I can't will myself to, you know, let him, or just kind of reconcile his past with his domestic violence issues. And Wiggins is are arguably worse than what Stevenson did. So, you know, it's definitely something that's hard to balance, having a guy like this, who, you know, on one side of things does have this horrible thing that he did in his past. And this thing that, you know, he should have been and was a little bit punished for, and should be, kind of be painted in this black light, but also has, you know, worked his ass off to earn another shot at the league and has done really well at every step of his kind of redemption tour. So, you know, it's a tough conversation to have and a tough thing to kind of reconcile for fans who, you know, where that stuff really bothers you. And I think that, you know, that's something that, you know, I'll probably continue to wrestle with as this season goes along, is like, how do I reconcile, you know, what Wiggins did, and kind of how these things, how to balance them with how he's playing and how he's kind of, and, you know, his words, and things that he's done talking about kind of coming back from that. You know, you do feel bad for the guy a little bit just because he did, you know, he did kind of get completely shut out of the league when several players who have similar histories to him have been afforded tons of chances since then. And I think that's the biggest thing where I kind of empathize with him is, you know, he was kind of written off and kind of taken out of the league completely, when there's guys like Stevenson who teams are like lining up to offer, you know, contract offers since, you know, his incident.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. And I just want to read this quote really quick that David Griffin said that I find really fascinating, from Jason Lloyd's story, which you can go find at ohio.com at the Akron-Beacon Journal, on his Twitter at Jason Lloyd ABJ. He said, and this is the quote from David Griffin, quote, "He spent 3 years paying for something that he didn't have any legal obligation to pay for," Griffin told the Beacon Journal. "So it was a fascinating situation. It's a really unfortunate situation. I know he's still friendly with the person involved, and I know she told the league very positive things about him, even though she had no vested interest in doing so. It's a very sensitive subject to us. It's something we cared a great deal about, and DeAndre has lived with everything he said he would to this point." I mean, that's GM speak in a lot of ways, right? I mean, I think... teams are going to play that card of, like, you know, he didn't have to pay for anything, and there's all these things kind of wrapped into that. I almost wonder if there was video of it or something like that, if he would even have a chance at this point, if you could condone it. But, I mean, David Griffin, as we've heard him talk about social justice issues in the past, is one of the most kind of outspoken GMs in that regard, right? I mean, he's a guy who, you know, seems like a very good guy from every interaction I've ever had with him, which is like, you know, four. He is a very eloquent guy. So I feel like there had to be some thought in his department about signing this guy. I feel like that had to be part of it. And I kind of just wonder if and I'm sure they did their own research. But I can't blame any captain out there who doesn't want to root for him if because of his past in that regard. Like, I think it's a very understandable position, like you kind of have explained.
Yeah, and I think another thing that kind of, you know, points to there being more to the story than just what he did is that this team and the way that they have spoken out about things and the way that we know that they kind of think off the court, you know, for them to accept him into this line roster, knowing his past and kind of helping him continue to, you know, find his place in the NBA, you know, I think that does say a little bit about him beyond his past. It's kind of like, you know, J.R. Smith, if you want to go back and dig up some of the stuff from when he was in Denver and when he was in New York, I mean, there's a lot of the stuff that we joke about. There's some stuff in there that he has done in his past that, you know, is just as big of an issue as this. And like this team, you know, they pick guys, you can tell they kind of want character guys, and they aren't going to put up with guys who don't really fit in with what they want to do. And I think it does say something about Wiggins that, you know, like J.R. Smith, he's coming from this situation where he's been, or where, you know, he's had a negative spotlight on him for a reason. And, you know, he's trying to rebuild himself. And I think that is, you know, that is something to take into consideration with this conversation, too.
Didn't J.R. Smith get sued for something that happened when he was with the Cavs? Like, he went to New York and he got, like, hit with a lawsuit or something like that for punching somebody in New York?
Yeah, I don't remember that one. I'm more speaking to the drunk driving incident.
No, correct. Correct. I'm just saying, like, I think like he's had stuff happen. Like, not the thing he did it when he was with the Cavs, but I want to say that there was something that happened with, like, he got hit with a lawsuit or something like that when he was in New York during a road trip. I might be wrong, but I remember something happening where, like, there was, like, a rumor and JR got hit with something when he went back. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think, like, the Cavs do value character guys. I mean, I think that's why Channing Frye has been a boon for them. I think LeBron certainly values that. If LeBron was not comfortable with DeAndre Liggins, however you want to interpret that, I don't think he would be on the team.
Yeah, that's kind of what I go back to is, like, if this guy was, you know, someone who is truly, like, irredeemable, and, you know,
in LeBron and David Griffin's eyes, like, I think he wouldn't be here.
Yeah, but, and, you know, that's still something where, you know, they may think it's, you know, they may think it's something that, you know, he can kind of work back from, but, you know, you can definitely see the argument that, you know, that's still not, like, still not enough for what he did. Yeah. And that's kind of where I sit a little bit. But, you know, we're just kind of throwing, you know, it's a difficult kind of thing to parse through, just because, you know, there are different aspects of the story that you can put in the forefront of your mind. And it's really kind of what's most important to you, you know, the guy, what he's done, or kind of the guy having, or what he's done since that. So, you know,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if he can keep up the level of play that he's shown on the floor. He's going to be getting more minutes now, I think than he had been before. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how his role with the team develops, and kind of how I think the narrative around him continues to develop as he steps into a bigger role.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Trevor, before we get out of here, we're gonna do something on this topic and then something else. But to wrap this up, do on a scale of 1 to 10, I mean, what is the level of concern the Cavs should have about J.R. Smith's injury and, you know, his, how long he's going to be? Like, I mean, how serious is this?
When you're playing for a championship, this is about an 8. Like, this is like an 8 or a 9. Like, this is a pretty serious thing, because not only is he going to be out for a significant portion of the regular season, like, this is something that, as we saw with Mo Williams last year, even though Mo didn't have surgery to fix his thumb issue, it's basically the same issue. And Mo's shot went to absolute crap after he had that injury, even into June. And I think that's the biggest concern with JR as you move forward is, you know, is he going to be able to get back to a level that they need him to be as a shooter? Because I can tell you who's definitely not going to be that, and that's DeAndre Liggins.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, teams are just going to ignore, like I've said this again and again, teams are going to ignore the crap out of him when he's on the floor.
Yeah. So, like, you can't really rely on that in a playoff series. Like, he's going to get exposed in a playoff series. I think there's potential that JR, even when he comes back, is going to be a liability a little bit. This is something that, you know, we were talking about trades for wings and stuff before this happened. Definitely needs to happen now.
Yeah, in my opinion. Yeah, so I mean, let me ask you that. I mean, do you think they is a wing a bigger need than up front because obviously they are one big man injury away from being kind of screwed as well. I mean, like, Kevin Love was out and they were literally had two healthy bigs. Like, that was like the nuttiest thing. I mean, they were literally Channing Frye and Tristan Thompson for a week. I think they need to get a guy. I think it's also, again, it's a lot harder to go get somebody than we'd like. I mean, it's easy to throw people in the trade machine and get somebody. It's not easy to call teams and be like, hey, like, so we have this Seti Osman guy, Mo Williams is a very small contract, and a crappy first-round pick. Like, what do you want to give me? You know, like, these aren't exact. The Cavs can't just call a team and blow them away. And they don't have a Anderson Varejao contract on the roster anymore to dump and get somebody.
Yeah, I think the big situation is definitely less of a concern than the wing situation, because I mean, you can use another wing even if you had even if Kevin Love was out for like a significant amount of time, because you have LeBron that you can stick at the four. You can counter for that by just playing a ton of small ball with LeBron in the post, or LeBron stretching things out and playing multiple wings to compensate for that. Of course, you need those wings if you're going to do that. So I think that's the bigger thing. The other thing that I think is also factoring in here is, you know, I think they should be targeting wings more in the trade market, because bigs are easier to find in the buyout market. You look back at the last few years, players that have been bought out, you can find a rotation level big man in the buyout market, because bigs get overpaid and bigs also need certain situations to be able to succeed a little bit more than the types of wings that the Cavs are going to be targeting. So I think that, you know, they can find a guy, and I obviously don't have any really good options off the top of my head, because there's been no talk of, you know, buyout or contract buyouts at this point, because teams are in trade talks. I think that's kind of the route the Cavs should take, because, you know, at the end of the day, you have Iron Horse Tristan Thompson and Channing Frye, which is a pretty good combination by itself, and you have LeBron who can play the four. Like, You've got three bigs that, when healthy, are really, really good. And even when the one who's not always healthy, Kevin Love, isn't on the floor, you've still got two that are very, very good.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that Kevin Love's injuries aren't exactly serious right now either. Like, my understanding of his knee injury is that if it was Game 7, he's playing.
Exactly. And the same thing with his back.
Yeah. Like, it's just, there's no need to play a guy right now when you're the Cavs. If you're wondering who's out there free agency wise, this is what I'll say. I'm going to throw out three names, And this is the guys that, if I was the Cavs, I would make calls on and try to get them on the roster if you can get them right now. One, number one, I am 100% calling Donatas Moniunis' agent, asking what he's up to. 100%. I know the back issue that he has the back issues, but that dude is a useful player who could fit with what the Cavs need. I'm just saying, if you could get him and make him help him redeem his career with the Cavs, worth it. Number two, I would call him Mario Chalmers. Like, I think it's worth it for what he could provide. It would allow Mon Shumpert to play less point guard and fill more minutes on the wing. And that would kind of solve two issues with one stone. The last guy I'm going to call, and this is going a little bit farther, my man, and I looked for the Cavs to try to sign him last year before he went to China, Darrell Wright. I mean, he is limited. He's not a good defender, but the guy can shoot. And it's better than, like, the Ray Allen thing I've seen Cavs fans tweet about. Look, Ray Allen's a legend, but, like, asking him to be a rotation player in the NBA right now is like asking Michael Bay to make a good movie. Like, it's literally just not possible.
Man,
hope you're not, like, a Michael Bay fan. Like, that would, this is going to be pretty awkward if you're like, I really love Transformers.
No, I mean, I agree with you on that front. I disagree, however, with you. You know my feelings on Darrell Wright. That everybody loves Darrell Wright until he's on your team, and you realize that he can't do anything else besides hit spot-up shots.
Look, five minutes a game while the Cavs need to fill minutes until April. I mean, I would rather have him than, like, Tayshaun Prince or Kirk Heinrich or Caron Butler. Like, just give me the guy who can shoot.
That's true. But, you know, I think that there's going to be better options than what's on the market right now. I mean, there just is nothing on the free agent availability, which is a testament to one, it's a testament to one, international leagues that are getting a lot of these guys who would normally be sitting on their butts looking for contracts. And two, it's a testament to NBA teams, you know, really being able to unearth, a lot of talent, and, you know, relying a little bit more on guys who can actually play rather than, you know, Carlos Boozer picking up another check as a 12th man.
Shout out to Carlos Boozer, like, just getting paid.
Still getting paid. But I don't see anybody, you know, the one player that is sitting at home right now that I think could actually be of use for a team like the Cavs would be Gary Neal. I think that he's a player who could be useful kind of in the right situation. He kind of got played out of the league because he was on a bunch of but, you know, it was literally only three seasons ago that he was a very, very or I guess it was four seasons ago that he was a very, very effective player for the San Antonio Spurs off the bench in a championship run. I think that he's a guy who could potentially be helpful. I think you're right with Moti Yunus. If there's any way that can happen, it should happen. But I just frankly do not understand that whole situation from any side.
I can't figure it out, like, if he's actually hurt or if it's like the Rockets just didn't want to deal with him, or, like, I just can't figure that out, because I feel like it has to be the back. That, to me, makes the most sense.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from any side, from Donatas' side, from the Rockets' side. Everybody's kind of screwed up that situation. But I think when we get to the trade deadline, there are names that are being floated around that are enticing. I mean, obviously, a guy like Wilson Chandler would be huge.
That's the dream. That would be the best possible guy they could get in the trade market.
Yeah, but the Cavs don't have the assets that a lot of other teams are going to be able to swing for those guys. So, you know, we'll see what happens. That's still 2 months from now, and a lot can happen in basketball in 2 months. So we'll see where teams are at.
Yeah, 100%. So, Trevor, let's wrap it up on this. Thank you for coming on and doing this and close to holidays. It is Christmas. It's, you know, the main holiday we celebrate the winter in America. Because we actually have a ton of listeners in Australia, so shout out to the Aussies who are still listening to a Cavs podcast, even though Delhi's on the Bucks. But shout out to my Aussie listeners out there. But this is something a lot of shows do, and I kind of just think it's fun. Just give me one thing, NBA, doesn't have to be cast specific, that you would want as a NBA Christmas gift for this year. Like, what's the one thing you want? Or a couple. I mean, if you have a couple, like, I'm here for that too. I have three that I'm really, really going to ask for this year.
Man, can we just get the Jazz healthy?
That's a really good one.
That team's so fun. Like, and the fact that they have the fourth best defense when they have been missing, most of their important players for like weak stretches of the season. George Hill's out and Dante Exum is out right now, and they're still winning games. Like with Raul Neto as playing backup point guard minutes. Like this team's insane, and I just want them healthy because they're a lot more enticing, and they make the playoff picture a lot more fun if they're at full strength come April. So that's really the thing that I'm looking for, is like just nobody else on the Jazz get hurt, and I think I'll be happy enough with that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Here are my three, and if you're gonna pick at them, I understand it because they're kind of goofy. Number one, get Boogie Cousins out of Sacramento. That's my number one. Yes. Let's just end that. Let's just call it what it is. It needs to end. I don't care where he goes. I kind of want it to be Dallas for sheer hilarity, even though they have no assets. But I need him out of Sacramento. I love Boogie as a player, but it is just a toxic situation in all regards. Like that just needs to end. Just get him out of there. Get him somewhere that isn't the Kings. Number two. Joel Embiid, just don't get hurt.
Yep.
like if Joel Embiid can just stay healthy, I feel a lot better about the Sixers. They need to figure out that big man situation, but they need to just – Joel Embiid needs to stay healthy because he's brilliant. He's going to be great.
Question for you. Yeah. Just to kind of paint the picture of, you know, how important it is to have Joel Embiid in this season. Say Joel Embiid gets hurt today. Misses the rest of the season. Who wins Rookie of the Year?
Jamal Murray. That's my hot. That's like without thinking about it. It'd be. I think I'd probably pick Jamal Murray, I guess.
Yeah, and that's kind of all that you need to know about this class. That a guy who is averaging 9.2 points per game and shooting 37.8% from the field is our backup Rookie of the Year option.
I mean, give it to Malcolm Brogdon for dunking on LeBron and Kyrie in the same game. Like, maybe just give it to him for that.
30-year-old Malcolm Brogdon, also our rookie first game. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, fine. My last thing I want for NBA Christmas is going to ask a lot, and it's going to require just a lot of sheer will. I want to see Russell Westbrook just keep up what he's doing all year, and I don't actually believe that it's possible. But if there's anything just like more inspiring than that, I need it. Oh, and my honorable mention is I just want Ryan Gosling for one point to be rumored to play Matthew Dellavedova. Like just someone like way too handsome and way too talented to play Matthew Dellavedova, like in his movie. I need that. Mm-hmm. I need that in my life. I just need something ridiculous like that to be a casting rumor for like 5 minutes before they cast like Liam Hemsworth or something like that.
Yeah, I'll throw another one out there. I'm just kind of glancing over the standings right now. And can we just get the Spurs Thunder series in the first round? Can that please happen?
Yeah, I'm here for that.
The rematch of that matchup, because Kawhi guarding Westbrook, the Thunder centers just destroying Pau Gasol on a nightly basis. Andre Roberson against Jonathan Simmons in a battle of two guys who have every tool possible except shooting. I'm in for that series. And actually, you know, the West is just going to be really fun in general. Golden State, Portland, which whatever. San Antonio, OKC would be wonderful. Houston, Utah would be insane. And then you get Clippers Grizzlies again.
Pour one out for the Clippers, man.
I'm in for all of these matchups, 1 through 8.
The last thing I'll say is I need Houston or Utah to play the Warriors in the playoffs. I need one of them.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we can get both. I need one of them to play the Warriors, and preferably I think I'd rather see Houston play them because I want to see Harden try to end that. I kind of need that in my life.
Mm-hmm. A third year in the row of Harden trying to go 1-on-5 against the Warriors defense and succeeding would be great.
This year, I just want to see him, like, you know, run JaVale off the floor. Like, that's kind of, I need that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, but Trevor.
Capella just throwing down all over Zaza. I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in. I love Houston. I keep track of how often I watch every team. They're number two. Like, the Cavs are number one because I watch every game. So in terms of non-Cavs teams, Houston's number one on my list of teams I've watched this year.
Yeah.
And it's truly because I'm blown away by everything they do. It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Portland's been number one for me because I love sadness.
Trevor, just
randomly I've ended up watching a ton of Portland games, and their defense, man, it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, Trevor, I have a lot of Kings and I have a lot of Lakers in my life. So, like, I mean, I think that tells you enough. it's been a bleak, like, 2 weeks for my basketball watching. It's been really bad.
Remember, we both came to basketball Twitter during the LeBron-less Cavs years. Oh. Like we will always have that in our roots.
Yeah, Trevor and I, when we started blogging, it was for Write Down Euclid, the then Cavs fan-sided site, and it was like Earl Clark and I was at the home opener where Andrew Bynum played, and I've never seen the cue louder other than when Andrew Bynum checked into the game. Just sad times, man. Like super sad times. I mean, we made it though, you know. Like we made it through.
And now I get to cover all those guys in EuroLeague and EuroCup, because there's a shocking amount of the guys who are on those teams who are playing over there now.
Yeah, I saw like it was like someone who dunked on Samardo Samuels the other day.
Jeremy Pargo.
Amazing. I mean, but Andrew Bynum's apparently like going to college for like computers or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
That guy. Like, I would read a. Like, I would read a 50,000-word story about Andrew Bynum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I need, like, Ramona Shelburne to, like, just go write a long-as-heck story about what Andrew Bynum's doing in 2016.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Like, I need that. I need like, a Kobe quote about Bynum, like, just snuck in there about, like, what he thought of Andrew Bynum. Like, I really need that in my life. I'm gonna need a detailed like play by play of like what Andrew Bynum was like with the Cavs, because everyone I've ever asked about it is just like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, I've never gotten like I'll talk to you about this response from that. And like Anthony, there's always like these little hints when former Cavs are asked about what it was like to play during those years. They like won't call it dysfunctional, but like you're like, yeah, we understand. Like it was hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really care about all the championship run tell-alls. Like, give me Jason Lloyd talking about that 13-14 season for days.
give me the breakdown of like the day Chris Grant got fired. I was like sitting in a psychology class in college, and I just remember being like, "Oh, Chris Grant got fired. This is a pretty normal Thursday."
Yeah.
Or like going into a class at like 9 a.m. and being like, "Oh my God, the Cavs got Spencer Hawes." It's like this big deal when the Cavs got Spencer freaking Hawes and he like revolutionized Kyrie's pick and roll game for like 6 months or whatever. It was crazy. Oh, those days, man. But Trevor, happy holidays, my man. Thank you for doing this. I hope you have a good Christmas. I hope you enjoy Cavs Warriors as much as I'm hoping I will. But I mean, is that the game you're looking most forward to on Christmas Day?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to that, number one. The rest of them have kind of lost their luster a little bit just because Minnesota's so bad, and we were all hype about that, but that game's not going to be good. Kind of excited for Clippers-Lakers, though. That'll be really a really fun nightcap.
Oh, I'm all in on Spurs-Bulls. That's my game of the day.
Ugh.
God. I mean, I just...
The team that can't score efficiently against the team that can't defend efficient shots.
I'm just going to watch Kawhi. Like, that's all I'm doing. Is I'm watching how Kawhi is defends that game. The Kawhi Island thing. That's all I'm watching.
That's all you should watch.
I mean, I'm you couldn't convince me to watch Knicks Celtics live.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to take a nap after I eat pancakes and open presents. That's what I'm going to do during that game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but Trevor, thank you so much. Have a Merry Christmas. All the listeners, have a Merry Christmas. If you're not celebrating Christmas, happy holidays. I hope you enjoy your Sunday. And we'll be back. We're going to be back on Monday next week because we got to talk about Cavs Warriors, because that's the biggest regular season game to date, regardless of what team you're viewing. And we're going to get into the details of that. hopefully have a guest for that, but it's going to be a crazy game. It's going to be a lot to take in. Hopefully it lives up to our expectations, or at least half of them, because regular season games sometimes suck, and that just happens. But thanks again to Trevor for coming on. Thanks to our listeners for making this just a great year of Lockdown Cavs so far. We'll be back next week with the full week in the lead up to New Year's Eve. But for Chris, for Trevor, this has been Lockdown Cavs, and we'll talk to you on Monday, and have a merry, merry Christmas.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.